This is Dan Starkey.
Attention, human scum! This is TravelingTheVortex.com. Listen!
Traveling the Vortex.
Welcome to Light City. Today is High Productivity Day. Happiness through acceptance. And joining the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landing in episode number 113. I'm Keith.
I'm happy.
I'm Glenn.
You're not productive.
I'm not productive. But the Doctor didn't really land there. Well, I did briefly, but briefly. Wasn't in our story for very much.
Can you really say we'll landing at episode? Because there wasn't a landing. We walked there, in.
We walked in through the barrier.
But we did that for the last two also.
That's true.
So,
which, by the way, the end of the second one qualifies my... suspicions.
Yeah,
but we'll talk
really
about
does.
That in a little bit.
I hate you, Kenny.
How are you guys? We just got done watching the Oscars. What'd you guys think?
We did. Well, we did. Well, first of all, we just got done digging ourselves out of a massive storm this week.
Winter Storm Q.
Winter Storm Q.
Was it Superstorm?
I don't know.
Winter Storm Q.
We got nine and a half inches here, so.
I think I only got three.
Snow. What?
At my house, I think I only got 3 inches.
You're insane.
I was shoveling the walk, and I was looking at it going, this doesn't look like
nine. You're insane. It was nine. It was a heavy nine. In fact,
they closed schools for this, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I used to have to walk uphill.
2 days. That's the amazing thing is 501 school district used to never, ever close schools.
My high school was three stories, and I would always joke that we'd have to be able to climb into the second story window through the snow banks before they would cancel snow cancel school.
And then 3 years ago, we got this superintendent who just every time there was a snowflake would cancel school. And now this gal, the next gal that Dr. What's her name? Singer was the last guy, right?
Yeah.
They're not from here.
Ford. Dr. Ford. No, they're not.
Isn't Ford from here? Ford she was promoted from
associate. Yeah, she was the associate superintendent. Yeah. Well, that's the point. She's following his lead. Yeah. So.
I think if you go back and look, she probably came from Florida before she was an associate superintendent. Somewhere without snow, because man, these people
Singer actually grew up here, though. Maybe that's why he canceled school.
He remembers
getting schools canceled.
But yet they still only budgeted 2 days in.
Yeah, so
for snow days.
We're already into a makeup day. So
and we're getting it again.
So that's where I was going with it.
Is this still Q or is this a different name?
No, this is just saw it tonight.
Not that we really should validate the Weather Channel and their stupidity.
Because that's
does
the
this
thing
make
is,
this one R?
It's not the
Radagast?
No, it's not.
It was a Bond joke. Thank you for picking up.
That's the funny thing about this.
I know
is
you wouldn't.
There's no, the Weather Center didn't name this one. The Weather Channel did because they wanted to
sensationalize. Yeah.
Anyway, I can't.
And Q was the best they came up with.
Yeah.
The subway line in New York City.
New York.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's the direction it was taken. The Q line. I know you'd like to think it was John Delancey.
I honestly thought they named it after Quasicodal, the winged serpent. You know that movie from the 80s.
They just didn't want to think they didn't want to think too hard about trying to come up with a Q name.
I think the next one should be a Winter Storm Cigarette Smoking Man. You know, from the X-Files. That'd be
doesn't
cool.
Have to go, it has to be R, right?
It would have to be R. That's why I said Radagast.
The next storm has to start.
They
do them in
apparently, I missed whatever came between Gandalf and Khan, and who knows what was between Khan and Q. So
they're usually rather insignificant disturbances when they first name.
But they
them.
Still get names, really.
Just like hurricanes.
Yeah. Well, I figured you would have had to.
They're basing it off the hurricane.
Yeah, hurricanes start as tropical depressions, or
and don't always,
and a lot of times don't become hurricanes.
I don't know how you can be depressed in the tropics.
Between Gandalf and Khan, there was Helen, Iago, and Jove.
Iago.
And then
I gotta choke down one more of these moldy, disgusting crackers.
Up next is Rocky.
Terrible.
Rocky, that's right. I did see that.
But
Rocky Horror, maybe?
Nope. According to this, it's Rocky. A single mountain in the Rockies.
is
that's lame. The origin of the name. All these other ones are like Rockies. Saturn, Triton, Virgil.
Well, Rocky is actually starting in the Rockies. That's why they're calling it Rocky.
We're naming it after they've chosen mountain.
All the names already.
Yeah.
So, I guess.
Do they have more after this?
Oh, they have all the way through Z. They have A through Z. I don't know when this was even posted.
Probably for the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they've determined all these long in advance.
Somebody got
the Weather Channel.
Somebody got Zelda.
Published October 2nd.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, this isn't the Weather Center.
Somebody named Zelda is going, come on, Z. Come on, Z.
Nope, that's Zeus.
How's it Zeus?
Lame. And Yogi is Y.
Lame. Anyways,
not from, the bear either.
We're about to dig ourselves out of
People who do yoga.
Oh, that's right, it is. But we're about to dig ourselves out of another storm, which, if you believe the forecast, it's going to be worse this time than the last one.
To 12 inches.
What I think makes it look worse is the rain and mix before
the
snow. Because then that will lie. The ice buildup is. I will take snow. I do not want ice.
Yeah. Ice is bad.
Yeah. Ice is bad. Okay.
Anyway, but yes, Oscars. As Keith was trying to say, we went to the annual Oscar party tonight,
hosted by moi.
How'd you guys do?
I had double digits.
So did I. I had 15.
Keith did much better than I did. Keith really impressed me.
I got 11. No, I didn't. No, I did.
I read 12, the article Entertainment Weekly put out and kind of
based. Oh, is that what you went by? Okay.
I didn't do all of them. Oh. I just went with some of them. Then I was like, I have no idea on this one. See, where previously, I guess, I just went with Entertainment Weekly's choice.
15 in a normal year would have put you neck and neck with a front runner. Unfortunately, the last couple of years, we've had Glenn and Corey there. And so there's very little point in
competing. Corey got 19,
and you got an insane 21 out of 24.
I think this was my first year in double digits. So
this was kind of
a huge improvement for me.
This was kind of my first year back paying attention to the Oscar season. Because the last couple of years, I've been so busy that I just kind of fell out. Because, I mean, the Oscars is like my, you know, in March, there's March Madness. I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. But in March, there's March Madness that leads up to the Final Four.
Oh, it's twice now.
For me, the season between December and February is Oscar season. And I love it. I get into it. And I watch all the – I listen to the pundits. I watch all the – if I don't actually see the ceremonies, I look at the results and I formulate my predictions based on that.
We used to run an Oscar Blitz website.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in the day.
Way back in the day. And but the last several years, I just haven't been able to get into it. But this year, I really kind of delved into it just over the past week after I got back from Galley. The Galley had been drawing my attention away from it. So this week, I sat down and said, okay, I'm going to go back and look through all my charts and stuff. And
I was really hoping it
must have paid off.
Mel asked me, she says, who do you think's going to take home Best Actor? And I just kind of looked at her. I was like, seriously? It's Daniel Day-Lewis. She goes, you think? I'm like, he's British. B, he's playing a real person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's going to win. That's kind of, if there's a formula for Oscar.
That's it.
That's it.
Didn't work for him for Gangs in New York that year. There must have been another.
I don't think Bill the Butcher was a real person.
There must have. Yeah, sure there was.
I think you're full.
No, he was.
You're just obsessed with that movie. No, I haven't even watched it yet.
You have never seen
it. I own it. I haven't watched it.
Oh, my gosh, Sean.
I'm behind.
What?
What? I'm behind.
How many years ago was that?
My gosh.
99?
Yeah. No, it was in the 2000s, I think.
I don't think so.
I think it was close to 99.
I haven't watched The Aviator yet either. I'm kind of behind on my Leonardo DiCaprio films.
Yeah, well. Anyway,
That's kind of what held me back from watching Gangs in New
York. You have seen Django Unchained.
But I have seen Django Unchained.
And you've seen Inception.
I've seen Inception. Yeah. I've seen The Departed. I've seen recent ones, but I was... After Titanic, I was a little burned out on Leo. So.
Yeah.
Was it 2002?
2002.
I thought it was in the 2000s.
What was in 99?
Yeah.
What, Leonardo DiCaprio movie was in 99?
Catch me if you can. That was the same year.
That's right, it was the same year.
It came out after it, but it was the same year as Gangs in New York.
99, he didn't have a movie.
Gilbert Grape was, what, 97?
No. I thought that was earlier.
93. Yeah. Romeo and Juliet was 96.
Titanic was 97.
Man in the Iron Mask was 98.
Yeah.
The Beach was 2000.
Oh, The Beach was horrible. God, that was
The Beach was a really good movie until it took that weird left turn in the middle and it became Apocalypse Now.
That's the problem.
What was up with that?
It takes that weird left turn and it unnecessarily.
Yeah. They had a really good story going there, and then all of a sudden it was like, did you change movies on me?
Yeah. I've always meant to go back and watch that one since it's an early Danny Boyle film.
It's good.
No, it's
not. For the first half.
It's not good.
I would go even so far to say the second half's probably pretty good, too, but putting those two halves together don't make a good whole.
Yeah, well, movie.
That's kind of how I feel about
movie can't Mr. go Nine. Based on half yeah. of its merits, so.
Yeah.
I like the first half a lot, and the second half I was just kind of
I'll vouch for that one, too.
District 9?
Yeah.
Yeah, second half gets all preachy on you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is like Happy Feet all over again.
And then somehow the documentary crew is still following them.
Yeah.
Any surprises from this year?
Sean was surprised by the original screenplay.
I was rooting for Tarantino to win it. I didn't think he would. I did pick that to win, even, but I voted with my heart this year, which is why I know you can't do that, and I do it every year. Every year.
He did on some of them.
You voted for Wreck-It Ralph, didn't you?
Yeah, he did.
And I'll tell you why. Now, I was on the fence between it and Brave, but it did. I mean, Brave won the Golden Globe, but Wreck-It Ralph won the animation award this year, the big one. And I think it also picked one up at the two of the three major film critics. I think Boston and New York picked it. And those are usually indicators that those are really usually very strong indicators. And so I thought, okay, that may have been a little hopeful thinking, but there was some sound science behind it as well.
I don't give the Academy that much credit. I think that most people in that get these viewers said, Wreck-It Ralph, that's about a video game. I'm not going to watch that.
Well, the problem is it depends on how many young and old you have in that audience. The old voted for Brave, and the young voted for Wreck-It
Ralph. And the old outnumber the young.
I think
it's starting to tip, it though. May be. I think the scales are
starting. Just looking at the animation category, the scales are starting to tip. Because Brave, Pixar, and a fairly plain forward story, and I don't know what that other 2D animated one, and then there was
the Pirates.
Pirates. Frankenweenie, and Paranorman. So like three or four of these animated films were almost genre.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. That's very rare for Academy to nominate anything
but
genre.
But there also wasn't a lot of good animated films come out last year, so you pick what you get. I'm surprised Frankenweenie got in there, to be honest with you. I haven't seen it, but I've just heard based on its reviews.
I'm sure the animation is good.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
That's not what you base it on.
You know what surprised me this year was the In Memoriam, or the Dead People montage.
Not very many actors this year.
Well, not only that, but it was seeing people that had passed from relatively current movies.
Oh,
that was what really threw me, that either that they're dying very young or I'm getting old.
Yes. No, one of those two. If you looked at a lot of those actors, a lot of them look like they died probably from illness, maybe early in the...
Yeah.
I mean, Nora Ephron, obviously. I think she had cancer.
That one surprised me.
There were a couple of those producers and editors that were quite young, and they were showing their last films, and their last films were like last year or two years ago.
When they went to the big hit, when like Tony Scott came up and it was Top Gun. It's
right,
that just seems weird to me, because I have issues thinking of Top Gun as being 20 some odd years old.
He sort of done himself in.
Well, yeah, but still, I mean,
he never got that sequel off the ground.
They're still doing it. They're still working on it.
Ridley will swoop in and direct it.
Sort of in his memory, so.
Think so?
No.
I don't know why he wouldn't. I mean, it's kind of an homage to his brother.
Yeah, he probably would.
His son was going to.
Yeah, that's the last thing that was ruined, so. And Tom and Kelly have both said they would come back and do it, so. Although, I'm sorry, women. Kelly McGillis is not looking very good now. I don't know how you'll put her up against Tom Cruise in a film and sell it, but
we'll kill her in the first 5 minutes, and that's his mission. Is now he's angry and he's going to go blow up somebody.
Have to do something. And then, of course, I heard they were in talks to get Anthony Edwards back. What? I read that and I thought, how are you going to do that?
I have a question.
Excuse me.
Goose. Spoilers. Goose is dead. How are you going to do that? Now you know who they could bring back. Strickland.
Strickland, yeah.
Oh, Val Kilmer's not doing anything.
He looks bad, too.
He's kind of ballooned up.
That's why it's going to be really difficult to do a Top Gun 2, because the only person in that film that looks good anymore is Tom Cruise. He's still a good-looking guy and not wearing
his age. I'm sure he doesn't look like he looked like in Top Gun.
No, I'm sure he does.
I have not seen Tom with his shirt off recently, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't look like that anymore.
I think there's a reason why he doesn't take his shirt off anymore.
Then again, admittedly, I'm sure if any one of us took our shirts off right now, we probably don't look like what we looked like when Top Gun came out. So,
no, I pretty much do.
Hold on.
I was about as flabby then as I am now.
Keith's checking to see if he was an embryo. It was 86.
86. Two-year-old chest.
Two-year-old. Then you have certainly changed.
I definitely have.
You might even have some hair in your head. Nope.
A few. Just a couple.
I can't believe you just looked to check.
Heck, I might have more hair now than I did back in 86. I was in junior high.
I have the same amount of hair, it's just a lot wider now.
In high school? You've probably always been hairy since high school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See,
I looked like Robin Williams. I looked like Robin Williams at birth.
Oh, my gosh. What did Robin Williams look like at birth? All right.
Short, fuzzy, and funny.
Anything else you guys do this weekend?
No. Oscars, a lot of fun.
Sarah and I made the trip up to Kansas City to go to iHeart Doctor Who Day at Vintage Stock.
How was that?
It was pretty good.
Show us your swag.
Hold on, I'm getting there.
Did you see any Kansas City Time Lords?
They were there earlier in the day.
Their meetup was like at 3 or something.
Yeah, which we didn't make it to that either. Oh.
Sorry, you guys. We didn't make it over. Galley kind of zapped all my fun. So,
but I talked with the same guy. We talked to last year doing the trivia questions. I think he's the manager of the store.
I would bet so.
And he actually recognized us. Or
did you cosplay again?
I didn't cosplay.
But I remembered you.
I wore the shirt you got me. No,
you did.
Actually, Sarah mentioned, yeah, he has a podcast. And he goes, oh, are you one of the guys from Topeka who just did Reign of Terror?
Oh.
So either he sees us on Facebook or Twitter or listens to us.
All right.
Hello to the manager from Vintage Stock on Metcalf.
He's got his name for us.
It
won't be
Sorry.
He's the one in charge of the Facebook page.
And good morning. I am the Great Stone Dragon.
And he offered us to put anything in the store that we wanted, like flyers and stuff.
We don't even have that rapport with our own Vintage.
He's very excited about Planet Comic Con. Normally, it's over a weekend. He goes back home to Wisconsin, so he's actually going to be there this year. Oh, and very much looking forward to meeting Daphne.
Good,
sweet.
Did the trivia stuff again?
How'd you do?
I'm very forward to meeting.
How'd you do
Daphne
without the brains?
I did great.
Really?
No problem.
No problems. You stick with the new Who?
I went with medium. I should have gone hard.
Did you win the bag? Oh, you don't know yet. They always announce that. Like a week later,
I didn't see the drawing.
Oh,
that's probably because they gave away too much last time.
I think
Sean has half the store.
Yeah,
I think instead of the drawing, they did the costume contest.
Oh,
which I wasn't sure how the costume contest was going to work. I didn't know how it was going to work, I didn't want to show up at the costume show up in costume and be like, oh, I missed the costume contest.
People could have.
I happen to have that information. There's a link on the Facebook page.
Now I know it.
Yeah.
If you click on that link and then go down to the costume contest, you vote for who you think is the best.
They took pictures.
And the winner gets a $100 gift card.
In your costume, they'd have taken your picture.
But they didn't say that anywhere on the event page. They just said there was going to be.
You should have just dressed up.
I'm going to tell you right now, Keith, anything that you go to that says Doctor Who, you should just plan on cosplaying. Just plan for it.
I'm not planning on cosplaying at least Saturday at Planet Comic Con.
Okay.
At least Saturday, you're not?
At least Saturday.
I'm not. I might Sunday. I'm not Saturday.
All right.
Because the costume contest at Planet Con is Saturday.
I know.
Since we're talking about Planet Con.
Hold on, let me finish.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
But
that's right, you got some swag.
I got some swag. I was really impressed
by...
That's
not really swag. He had to actually buy it.
He purchased it.
My haul.
Is it still swag
if
you have to buy it?
That's it, it's haul.
I was impressed with what they had. They had a much bigger variety than previous...
Even the last Doctor Who day.
Doctor Who day. Including the...
Good, they did restock after they gave you all the stuff that they had.
And I'd have bought stuff this year if I had money.
They had a nice big comic rack and a bunch of books. And they also had the new Titan vinyl. minifigures.
Yeah, it's copying off of
they were $9.99, but it was 20% off. So it's like, oh, 20% off all Doctor Who merchandise. I'm going to...
Do you know which one you're getting when you...
No.
So it's a sealed
box. Oh, those are the sealed... Okay, I've seen the sealed
box. There were only two left when I was there.
I want the TARDIS.
Matt apparently didn't go to that vintage stock because he couldn't make it over there. Matt Brown, our friend from Slugcast, and got a Dalek and a TARDIS.
Oh. Does our vintage stock have those? Does anybody know?
I don't know. I haven't seen
them. I haven't been over there yet.
You should check.
They do have the minifigures.
Oh, they do.
Which
we got. I love the Santarin.
We got four minifigures, and this was the only new one we got.
That's awesome. So you didn't.
So
have
now we have like five Oobs. Well, I did get another. Oh,
what?
I did get another.
What?
Cyberman.
Where's Dan Starkey?
Does it come with the potato head? What?
That's all it comes with.
Oh, no, that's ridiculous.
So the Santarin minifig does not have a it does have a removable potato helmet. Head?
Nope.
It, but you pull off the helmet and there's just a peg underneath.
Oh, major fail. Upset?
I was a little disappointed by that, too.
There's no Dan Starkey in there. It's just a peg.
You know, that also tells me the Judoon is only a helmet, too.
Oh, I bet you're right.
Man, I am so...
Although, it makes me wonder...
I was looking at it going, that's really cool. I want one. No, I don't want one now.
It makes me wonder if there's a variant version.
I hope so,
because there was a variant version of the Doctor without his jacket.
I want one.
I think there's probably a special edition that you pull the helmet off and it's got George Lucas inside.
Moffat.
Or Steve Moffat. Steve Moffat.
And they also had some books, which they had a bunch of the new series books, but then they also had some classic books. So I picked up Trading Futures and Eighth Doctor Adventure.
Ooh.
They had two different Eighth Doctor Adventures.
By Lance Parkin.
Sam was his book companion.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, you'd have to ask Glenn. I haven't.
Sam was in Eight Doctors. Yeah, so that's probably right.
From reading the description,
she was barely in the Eight Doctor because she's in the beginning, and then he picks her up at the end.
I think it was Sam, a companion that wasn't Charlie,
Samantha,
or Daphne. It was in the description, and it made it sound like it was a continuation from previous events, so I didn't pick that one up. I was really tempted to pick up all of them, because they were $2.99 a piece.
Oh.
And that was normal price. That was not the 20% off. So go up to
No, why? They also happen to notice how much those were at Galley? In the dealer's room?
No, I didn't bother.
Try $9.99 or more, depending on the book. I saw a couple...
What'd you pay?
$2.99. I saw a couple of paperback books for $20.
Go up there, and they have... They have the other Eighth Doctor. Hold on, I'm getting there.
Well, you can pass it around and still talk about it.
They have another Eighth Doctor. They have at least one First Doctor with Ian, Barbara, and Vicky. They have a Fifth Doctor. They have a Seventh Doctor book. And I think a Second Doctor. I'm not sure. I looked over all of them, and that was the one that kind of grabbed my attention.
Well, Crooked World, he's with Anji and... Can't remember the other guy's name. I keep wanting to say Chris, but that's not right because Chris is
definitely a female's audience. Name.
No,
I thought female.
Fritz, yeah, Angie and Fritz. Fritz.
Just me, or does that kind of look like a Dalek eye stock on there?
A little bit.
I can see that.
A little bit, although it might also be like a sonar.
Yeah, it looks like that also.
Panel or a radar.
But there was also.
I think it's a Dalek story.
What, 2 years ago? Was it 2 years?
No. Yeah, it's been
Two Christmases ago. Sean got me the
God, was it that long?
Doctor Who and the Cybermen book.
Two Christmases. Story, it's only been two Christmases. A year and 2 months.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We're just out of Christmas. Okay.
And it's a line of novelizations that they republished. And I saw it and I looked in the back of all the other books they did and I was like, this is really cool, but there's only one other one I would really want to get.
What's that?
And I couldn't find it anywhere.
Oh, when you got the other two.
When I got the other one. And it was... And the Crusaders. Because it's a lost story. I'm right in that, right?
Yes, it doesn't exist. Yes.
So, Crusaders didn't exist.
Right. Well, there might be one episode, but...
But the likelihood of getting it on DVD and seeing it is pretty slim.
Exactly.
Not until the animation wizards start working.
Yeah.
And so I saw this. They had it at Ninja Stock, and I saw this, and I was like, well, regardless, I have to get this one.
Yeah,
I went back to the Hastings and Lawrence multiple times trying to find the other books of these, and they didn't have them after that Christmas. So I'm really pleased
I'm glad I got that one for you when I did, then.
Yeah. Because the only other one they had was And the Cave Monsters, which would have been the Silurians. Because it was a third Doctor story. So they renamed it.
Gotcha.
To the Cave Monsters. So that's my haul from...
So is that going to be the next book you read for the next book set of book reviews?
Trading Futures, likely. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Keith, well, this one might be one they work on later because they've got two episodes of it. The first one, The Lion, exists on PAL Digital Betacam, which could be reconstructed a bit. The second episode is only steals or fragments. The third one is 16mm, and then... the last one is also steals and fragments, so it's half there, kind of.
A little over half.
Digital Betacam is probably rough, but
see what surprises me about. I understand some of these novelizations that they chose Doctor Who and the Daleks. That's an iconic story, of course. Do the novelization,
right.
But the Cybermen, which is the moon base, Lost.
Right.
This one, Lost. The other one I didn't realize they did, which I would also want to get, is the Abominable Snowman.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
Great
Lost.
Intelligence.
Okay, that's... Bring out the novelizations of the stories we can't get anymore.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But then they go on to the Auton Invasion, the Cave Monsters. It's like, I can watch those.
Cave Monsters?
That's the Silurians. Mm. I can watch them.
That's Doctor Who and the Silurians?
Yeah.
Well, but they're trying to get some Pertwee out there, and those all exist in some form or another.
I understand. Maybe having the nostalgia for some of the novelizations would... Oh, I remember reading that over and over when I was younger, like Sean has had some of his stories. That I can understand that, but marketing to new people who have not seen these or not read these...
won't have a chance to see some of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Focus on the... Which, and it looks like they only did one year of these. Like, this one batch, and that was it.
Right.
Which is a shame, because I really like the art on it.
Yeah, they're really cool looking. Not as cool as the art on the new set that's coming, that 50th anniversary set.
Oh, yeah, that minimalist style that you don't like?
I know. I really like the artwork on it, for some reason. All right, well, anything else going on? Oh, let's move on to news. Oh, no, let's talk about Planet Comic-Con.
Planet Comic-Con.
Yes, absolutely.
We can now confirm that we will have...
We don't do ads.
Huh?
Go on.
That was for the comic contest, or the costume contest.
We can now confirm that we will have a special guest on our panel.
Yes.
Daphne Ashbrook will join us.
We still don't know which day or time that panel
is. We don't know when that panel is going to be.
Daphne will be joining us on the podcast live. On our panel, on our podcast. Very cool.
Squee!
Daphne, I'm going to apologize in advance for the fanboy reaction you're going to receive.
No, we're very professional.
Uh-huh, sure.
We proved ourselves well at Galley, so we'll be as professional.
You guys are professional.
We talked to Stephen Thorne about light bulbs.
Not on the interview.
Did you really?
Not during the interview.
You should have included it.
So do you have those curly cues over in England, or are they just the standard? You guys probably still use gas lamps, don't you? They still do that down there.
What about the gutters?
He thought.
What's your gutter situation?
Do you cover yours, or you just do the...
gutter helmet. Excuse me.
I'm totally asking Lando Jr. that question.
Lando Jr. So are we excited about Daphne?
Oh,
isn't that awesome?
So awesome.
I'm so excited. So
I am beyond
jazzed. The listener will be able to hear also. If you don't make it to Planet Comic Con, you at least get to hear
us. Our squee.
Our you know, Daphne.
Is it going to be worse for you than Nick Briggs?
No. But I walked up and talked to Daphne and carried on a nice little conversation with her for a little while. So. Yeah. I got that little fanboy.
We primered you.
Out of the way, yeah.
Okay.
So we're good.
I don't care. I'll still be screaming.
All right. Well, some sad news this week.
Oh, yes.
We have to.
We do. Unfortunately, Raymond Cusick passed away. Raymond is actually, I was reading about him on the plane because I was in prepping for my Daleks panel. I was
and you didn't bring
reading.
That up.
I didn't bring what up?
No, you didn't bring it up on the panel.
But he died?
No,
he didn't die.
Never mind. Continue.
What should I write up on the panel?
I would have just thought that if you'd write up on him, that you would have mentioned. And you know,
oh, no, just,
we owe this all to
Ray. I wasn't really formally reading up on him. I was reading about the Daleks, and he.
Oh, he was just—he was a footnote in the book.
Well, he's not a footnote. He really is. He is the reason for the design.
Yeah.
Of the Daleks. I mean, he's the reason they became the quote-unquote Pepper Pot design, because from the book itself, it talks about how Terranation had kind of just put forth the idea of what they were. And it was really came to Raymond, who sat down and said, okay, and sketched this out and said, looked at the, and the BBC at the time was saying, no bug-eyed monsters. We don't want bug-eyed monsters. So he said, okay, I got to come up with a really cool design that's sleek and has really neat looks so that I can, you know, we can kind of sell this. Because, you know, Verity, she was nervous because the BBC was really big about saying, we're going to do historicals. We're going to do things that kids can learn about. We're not doing bug-eyed monsters. And apparently Marco Polo wasn't ready to go. The script wasn't ready, and the production wasn't ready for it. There was another one down the road that they were going to try to push up, and it wasn't ready yet. And so, unfortunately, they had the Dalek script, and they said, okay, we have to do the Daleks. So that's why Daleks falls number two, otherwise Daleks would have been down the line. And had they pushed it too far down the line and kids weren't watching this show, they probably, because Daleks really is what brought.
Oh yeah,
I mean, that's why we have 50 years of Doctor Who because of the Daleks. I mean, you can't overlook that. It was Dalek meaning went incredibly mad, and all of that comes down to the fact that, you know, Raymond Cusick came up with this classic, iconic design. So
just a note for all you producers out there working on sci-fi shows today: we kind of like bug-eyed monsters.
Yeah, we sort of do.
Give the people what they want.
So anyway, yeah, so we owe a lot to. Raymond.
Well, because and this is something I'll be honest. It was a name that was completely unknown to me in Who fandom, which I felt really bad about once I realized who he was and what he did. But because so much is attributed to Terranation, creator of the Daleks and blah blah blah, you don't really think about it. But Terranation did what all writers do. The script would have been, and then a horrible monster lurches onto the screen with a footnote designed like a tank. You know, and that was probably it. That was all the input they really got. And so it was up to this guy to come in and really, okay, it's a rolling tank. How do we come up with that? How do we visualize that? And, it's, you know, once again, it's up to the genius of the behind-the-scenes production people to actually put this together.
This is Ray's first design for the Daleks. Ooh. Yeah, and you can't see this on a podcast, but it's very similar to
it's a,
what...
It's a Dalek.
Yeah, exactly.
And it actually looks very much like the Emperor Dalek from Remembrance.
It sort of does, but it's got, not quite it's as got much the of a pincer bulbous claw, head. Which we ended up getting later in some of the Dalek designs, but they went with the plunger because it was functional. It wasn't functional, but it was easier to...
cheaper to manufacture.
I think that's probably what it boiled down to, but... but they, yeah, that was.
Say, everyone go to your toilet and grab a.
He also a pincher claw. I got to manufacture that. It's got a hinge point. We're not doing that. Let's just do a sucker.
Ray also was trying to get the trike design inside so that they were able to roll around. Now that didn't work. They ended up having to put them on casters because they couldn't afford to build that design in the four Daleks that they originally had. And so it became too expensive, and so they went ahead and just put casters in there and put a seat. Now, and I think if I remember right, Ray was the reason why the operators got to sit down, too.
Because he yeah, thought, I, do, you know I what? Did read that, yeah.
They're going to be in these casings all day long, so let's put a bench in there so that at the very least they can sit down.
He said that's where the when the design input was a lunch that he had with one of the other guys, and he did. He picked up the salt and pepper shaker and just kind of moved it across the table and said, this is how we'll move with no visual means of... He just wanted him to kind of whoom and glide across the room. And then he realized, looking at that he had to put a chair in there for the operator to be able to sit down to operate it and kind of Flintstone their way across the floor. So that was where, you know, all of a sudden, boom, you've got a shape because he had to design it around the guy sitting in it.
Right, right.
I mean, necessity, the mother of invention.
Absolutely.
But rather sad news there.
So Ray will be missed.
Had they cast Ray for Adventure in Space and Time?
I don't know.
He should be played by John Goodman.
He should be.
Because he was fantastic in Argo.
Yeah. I've just come to the conclusion that John Goodman
is just good in everything. Yeah,
John really Goodman is. Should just be cast in everything.
I would agree. Wow,
he was also
Argo was such a good movie. Which, by the way,
Beyond the Sea.
Argo won.
He was good Beyond the Sea.
If you hadn't heard by the time this comes out tomorrow, Argo won Best Picture.
Spoilers! What? And I hope you, if you set your DVR to record this, I hope you set it for a really long chunk of time. Because yeah, it's a long broadcast.
Although I enjoyed the whole thing.
I did
too. It was fun. Yeah,
I don't think there were any moments that flagged.
Seth was good.
I'm not sure what the audience knew what to make of Seth.
No, that was the problem. He was very edgy. I think he was good. Although I thought he railed it back and considering what he could have been.
Oh.
So. Yeah. No,
what his normal primetime show is.
I thought he was a good host. I thought he was very funny. But I don't think the audience, I think they kind of came into it with that mindset of, it's Seth MacFarlane, we're not going to like you. And then they kind of found themselves laughing at a few of the jokes and got mad. So, yeah.
I think they were mad at themselves for being laughing at the jokes.
I thought the Lincoln joke was funny.
I thought so too.
Really? 150 years too
soon? Still too soon?
150 years ago and it's still too soon? I got some Napoleon jokes that I'm going to bring out later. All right. Back to... All right.
That's it.
Okay. So the next part, the thing that we usually go onto after news is...
Is what?
Feedback.
It is feedback, isn't it? That's normally the part of the show that follows news, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Usually. Sometimes. I think there was once that we skipped it.
No, I don't think we've ever skipped feedback.
Never skipped it?
Never.
We should never skip it, because feedback's an important part of the show.
He's talking up to his cue.
There's a really long intro here.
You couldn't have skipped ahead a little bit.
No, not with iTunes.
How long did it take you to write this one?
A long time, actually.
Did it?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Feedback. Deep breath.
We talk about things and somebody cares. They send us email and they send us letters. You're calling our number, but we gotta make clear. We can't say sure the show will be in a year.
You got the whole thing going.
A dark-haired producer with a face like a gent. He goes by the name of Stephen Moffat. Well, I got bad news. He's a real good liar. And if he kills Claire again, I'll become a big crier. That's all I got for you.
Yay! Worth the wait. Worth the wait. Well, I don't know.
It wasn't a Queen song.
I did that on purpose.
Just a Queen song. It doesn't... Whoever got him in the rut of doing Queen songs. I love Queen, don't get me wrong.
Doing Queen songs.
But somebody
did
said,
two in a row.
No, but somebody said they had to be Queen songs from now on.
That's because he did two in a row.
Three in a row.
Was it three?
Three.
I want some Stones next week. Oh, ooh. Beatles. No, don't run the Beatles for me. Don't run the Beatles for me.
The Who?
Can you do some Bob O'Reilly?
Feedback wasteland.
No, that's only when the mail goes to the wrong place and you forget to check the junk mail.
That's when we don't have anything.
That's where all the Dr. Phil stuff wound up.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Who's first on the feedback today?
First up, Chrissy. She writes, "The Vortex Girl back in the Feedback's back segment. Dear Vortex Boys, for some reason I thought you were recording last week's episode on Wednesday, which is why I didn't get any feedback since then. But I figured everyone had heard enough from me about Galley over the course of the weekend, and I love being on the podcast during the Galley, so thanks for letting me invade the Vortex for a few days."
You're welcome.
Everything that...
we enjoyed having you.
We did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun.
And I've enjoyed your blog post so far. She just posted her third one tonight.
Oh, did
she?
So. Okay. I'm behind. We'll have to make sure to get her... blog post address in the notes.
Yep.
Everything that Glenn, Sean, and Mel said was pretty much what I wanted to say anyways, minus a few things that I've been slowly posting on my blog, but most of it's turning out to be repeats of the same stuff. Still worth reading if I do say so myself. So, listening to Glenn recount the breakfast incidents...
I didn't recount.
That sounds
Sean
like a Big
did.
Bang Theory episode title. I guess it really isn't that funny.
Yes, it is.
It's definitely a you had to be there sort of thing. Also, I had a sense of humor and maturity of a 12-year-old, so that could have been why I was dying of laughter at the end of the last galley update.
I really wish you'd have been there for that. Just to literally have seen her go through that range of... Because she's talking about emotion. She's talking about closing surgeries. Yeah. And she's... I had to get up and go get Kleenex from the bathroom and bring it out into the hotel for her. Because she was just... she was really verklempt. And then to go from that to the, I can't breathe, I'm laughing so hard. Like, it was like one of us around the table. So I thought it was funny.
It was funny. I'll probably laugh this more next year, but...
She continues with, okay, Sean started talking about this last week, but Keith interrupted him. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So I have to give my two cents on classic Who cosplay versus new Who cosplay. Sean and I actually discussed this at Galley while Glenn and Siri were giving us a tour of parking lots at LAX. Have you ever tried looking for a Fifth Doctor coat? I'm not talking about a tan coat that you make additions to. I'm talking about a Fifth Doctor coat complete with red trim and a stick of celery stitched to the lapel. On the other hand, I have a Tenth Doctor overcoat in a brown suit that I found at a thrift shop for $15, and I didn't have to alter it at all. Well, I had to have the suit taken in because it was too big, but that was the extent of the alterations. I mean, no disrespect to new Who cosplayers, because you do have to go looking for costume pieces, and sometimes you don't quite find what you're looking for. But if you're going to cosplay as classic Who characters, more often than not, you have to make the costumes from scratch or near enough to it. It's hard to buy something already made in a thrift shop or something unless somebody else has already made a piece for the purpose of cosplaying as a classic Who character, like my Fifth Doctor Who sweater, which was specifically advertised and sold as a Fifth Doctor sweater. But that makes classic Who costumes easier. I was prepared to make most of my costume from scratch. I planned on making a skirt and adding trim to a tan coat, finding the hat. That close was pure luck. I just needed to replace the hat band. Like I said, new Who costumes present different challenges, like actually finding comparable costume pieces. Classic Who costumes you pretty much have to make from square one.
To kind of reiterate what, because you were staring intently at your phone as we were walking around the parking lots, specifically what I said is, and I say this with...
It wasn't necessarily true. I was about seven steps ahead of you guys, too, so I didn't hear what you guys were talking
about. That's true, too. Yeah. But you were seven steps ahead of us because you kept arguing with Siri under your breath saying, I know it's in there somewhere. Please find this so I don't look like an idiot. Anyway, and I have to say this with some amount of humility because I don't generally cosplay. But if you're cosplaying...
You don't generally cosplay?
I don't generally cosplay.
Never cosplay?
No, not since the time that we've been doing this, no.
Oh, okay.
But you've cosplayed before?
I wore a Starfleet outfit.
Too. Yes, the Star Trek.
Star Trek outfit. Yeah. Okay. I've done that before, not on Halloween. But if you're going to go out and have, you know, if you buy a T-shirt and a leather jacket and then go and show up as the Ninth Doctor, I'm sorry, you're cheating. It just doesn't cosplay. And what they've done, don't get me wrong, I appreciate the fact that there were so many cosplayers at Galley. We saw a ton of Donnas and a lot of Rose and obviously Amy and the 11th Doctor and on and on and on. But, and no offense to you, Keith, but the tweed jacket and a bow tie and a fez,
it depends on how much you put into it.
That's just it. You put a lot of effort trying to match colors and pinstriping and
patterns.
The level of the cheat and how big are the patches, and you really are meticulous about it. But for the most part, people just go out and they throw on a bow tie and a fez and go, hey, look, I'm cosplaying. And it's like, it doesn't count. I'm sorry, it just doesn't count. But New Who has really made it very easy to cosplay because so many of these outfits are pretty much, you know, tailor-made, ready to go. I mean, you would think Captain Jack. We saw how many Captain Jacks at Galley? I mean, there were a ton of them.
I only saw three, I think.
Oh, I saw a ton of Captain Jacks. And here's the thing. You would think the hardest part of that is the coat, right? Everybody's got the Captain Jack coat on. Everybody's got the Air Force.
I think the hardest part would be the suspenders, actually.
You know what I saw one of, and I was surprised I hadn't seen it before, was Captain Jack from the Bad Wolf episode?
Bad Wolf.
Where, what's the one with the video game station?
Yeah. Yes.
Where he's wearing just the white T-shirt and the black vest. Oh, and a gun. No. And I was like, I've never seen that Captain Jack before. Now, obviously, that's a simpler costume.
That's easier.
That's a lot easier, but that's the first one of those I've seen.
That's clever.
So I thought that was really kind of interesting.
Black vest, white t-shirt. But, it was very cool.
Yeah. I have nothing but admiration for the cosplayers who do go out and reach into Classic Who, because even if you're doing one of the Doctors, you've got to work a little bit at that costume. You can't just show up.
The odds of finding a crushed velvet suit anywhere with a cape is pretty slim.
Exactly, and that's just it. Or if you're even going, you know, further into that and doing what Mel did with Happiness Patrol, if you're coming as, you know, the Master and you've actually put a lot of effort into finding a Nehru jacket, or if you're doing, you know, one of the companions from that era, those are harder costumes to pull off, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but I have nothing but admiration for the Classic Who players. But the cosplayers for New Who, it's just almost a little too easy because it's been so very real world established. There's not a lot of... Now, if somebody wants to show up as a half, I will be blown away.
As a what?
A half. You know, the fish people with the...
Oh, yeah.
The Doctor's Daughter episode.
See, and it's there's some, like, the Adipose.
Yeah, that one.
Or an Ood, where those take... The monsters take a lot of effort.
If you're doing them right.
It's the companions and the doctors that don't take as much effort, or people don't put as much effort to make them as authentic as they could be.
So that was the gist of our conversation.
Thoughts and opinions of Sean and Keith are that of themselves.
I just appreciate the fact that people care enough about the show to want to cosplay, period. But I appreciate more the people who look to Old Who
You did tell those people that dresses New Who characters that they're cheating. So
I'm saying grabbing a blue shirt and a red tie and a
cheating.
I feel like you're cheating in a way because it's too easy. I could go cosplay as the 10th Doctor. All I need is a brown suit and some sneakers. I mean, you don't need to do that.
It's not cheating though. I'm sorry. It's very difficult to find some of those things that they're looking for too. Not as difficult as a classic.
It depends on how close you get to it. You can go get a brown suit, or you can go get a brown suit with blue pinstripes, and the blue pinstripes makes it difficult to find.
That's true. There's degrees within that as well.
Some people just find the brown suit and they're cosplaying. No, they're dressing up. They're not cosplaying.
I disagree. I think it's all cosplaying, and I think it you should do it to any degree that you want to. Now, I agree that I admire the people that really go in and dig deep and get authentic with it, but even the guy wearing a fez and a bow tie and that's it, well, and other clothes, but that simply says the Doctor, all power to you. I appreciate every little bit.
Well, it's like Kiana said, it's not so much that you want to nitpick, well, your costume's wrong. I'm not saying that at all.
No.
Because I don't want to give anybody a complex about it, and I'm not going to be the guy that's going to go, well, you got brown shoes instead of blue, but, you know, it's pretty...
I do that with my own, but not with other people.
Yeah, if it's your costume, you can nitpick it, but, you know, you wouldn't do that with anybody else's. It's grading on a curve, and it's much more difficult to cosplay from Classic Who.
I agree with that. What I have issue with is telling other people that their stuff's not as good or they're cheating, because any degree of cosplaying to me, shows that you have a little bit more dedication as a fan than say somebody as me, as far as that realm, because I'm never, ever going to cosplay anything in my life. You guys will never see me in a Doctor Who outfit. Now, that doesn't degrade my love of Doctor Who at all, but you'll never see me in that. So somebody that will
go... Don't I have a video of you wearing a Han Solo vest at some point?
No. Never have. The only thing I ever dressed up for was I guess I
wore that.
I wore... Yeah.
Come to think of it. I wore that to your birthday.
You did. The only thing I've ever dressed up was I dressed up as Eddie for Rocky Horror when I went to Rocky Horror Picture Show one time. But you kind of, I mean,
that's different.
That's part of the thing to do. But no, I will never dress up, go to a con. That's not my thing. So, I mean, anybody that puts a fez and a bow tie on, to me, that's impressive that you go to that, at least that extent. So, and then on the down the road, with the further they get with the costume, more intricate, yeah, I appreciate the costume even more. And it is much more difficult to do the Classic Who. And I agree with everything that you guys are saying from the standpoint that Classic Who stuff, you almost have to build from scratch, build from square one, and that New Who is a lot easier to come by. I agree with that, but I will never ever put anybody down and say you're cheating or you're not a real cosplayer just because you've got one or two items on. That's all I'm saying. I think that doesn't disservice to everyone.
Maybe it's too strong of a word. I'll give you that.
Wow, sorry. Didn't mean to. I didn't realize that was in.
Okay, I'm wrong. All right. I got the horn.
I'm afraid that means our time is up.
Duh. So anyway, I'm sorry. That was the gist of our conversation. So continue with Chrissy's email.
She says, bottom line, Keith, I want you to cosplay as the Third Doctor next year at Galley. Velvet suit, lace frills, a perfect wig, the whole nine yards. Do it. And get started now. I've thought about it, Chrissy.
And yes, you should get started now. Don't be like Mel. Don't get your inspiration 2 weeks before.
I don't know. For 2 weeks, you put together a terrific costume.
Thanks.
Yeah, you guys did wonderful on it. It was great.
I still think I might
have to start going to thrift stores and keep my eye out.
We've got so many different ideas of things we want to do. Like we joked about doing the what's his name from Carnival of Monsters, the guy and his assistant. I think that'd be a fun costume to wear with the big CD wrappers on your coat.
I think the thing that hurts here is we are very limited on the amount of thrift stores, so the amount of type of those places that you would find the items, even to start from square one without, you know, just completely fabricating the whole thing from scratch.
Yeah,
it's really hard to go into a thrift store because there's not a lot around here. Now, Kansas City, bigger cities, I don't know about Salt Lake, you know, there may be a little more variety there, but I certainly think bigger cities, it's easier to because you have a variety of thrift stores to go into and keep your eye on.
That's true. That's a good point.
I've only gotten two of my pieces, I guess three of my pieces from a thrift store. I mean, my most recent shirt came from Penny's.
Yeah. Well,
my bow tie came from ThinkGeek.
That's what I'm saying is for a lot of people, especially if you're on a budget, it's easier to do it.
That's why you started now. Yeah.
Anyway.
I might have to forego the cape. If I find the suit, I'd have to forego the cape because the odds of, or make a cape and hope I can find back.
I bet we could go down to Civic Theater and find an opera cape. I bet Shannon would loan you one.
But his cape always matches suits.
Well, we go down and find that first. Then you custom build a match.
That's true. All right. Okay. Anyway, yes, Galley was fantastic and more than worth it. I think everyone needs to go to Galley 1 at least twice in their life. More if you can manage it. There is just no way to adequately describe the experience to someone who has never been. I am going to try to go next year. I may have to shove a few people inside in the registration queue on March 8th, as it were. But I'm going to do it. I hope we see more of the Traveling the Vortex people there, Keith and Sarah, certainly, but the listeners and Friday Night Who folks as well.
Yay!
Reviews! It feels like it's been a long time since I did this.
It has been a long time.
The Natural History of Fear. I've listened to this one before, and it was confusing this time as it was the first time I heard it. However, I could follow it better this time knowing that the editor, the conscience, and the nurse weren't really the doctor, Chris, and Charlie.
Chris. Yeah. Chris. I noticed they were putting the emphasis on the C, the Chris this time.
Basically, Team TARDIS took off long before the events in this story even happened, and this is just the people of Light City mucking about with their memories for unfathomable reasons. Owen, Light City is a more sinister version of the Happiness Patrol. Yep, that's it. Moving on.
I kind of got that vibe, too.
It really did.
Well, the whole...
We'll get there, but...
yeah.
Happiness through productivity.
The Twilight Kingdom. Memo to the BBC. This is how you do the Absorbaloft. Except you don't call them the Absorbaloft, because even that name is terrible. This cave creature in this story is properly disgusting. We don't realize it until the doctor starts observing internal organs and flesh and disembodied voices, making everyone go crazy. And if I had been paying attention, I'd notice that the CD cover of this art gives the story away. Though a cave with a face is sort of easy to miss. After Natural History of Fear, it was nice to have an actual adventure with the Doctor and his companions solving mysteries and fighting monsters. Even if there was a bait and switch at the end when the TARDIS showed up, except it really didn't. This Divergent Universe stuff is giving me a headache. As Charlie said, what I'd give for a straightforward, uncomplicated ham sandwich. Sincerely, Chrissy, who as part of this past Friday Night Who is now known as the choir girl, apparently. Eh, I'll go with it. But now I'm curious. Does that make me the Vortex Choir Girl? So many nicknames.
Number one Vortex Choir Girl.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Yep, absolutely.
And I don't know if I'd call you a choir girl or not. You did, after all, throw your unmentionables at us relatively early in the podcast. So,
where'd the choir girl thing come from? I was at Friday Night Who, but I didn't catch that.
I was teasing her about...
She was saying how hot Ian was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
And I said, after meeting you, I don't expect that kind of talk from you.
All right, let's move on to our review.
Just razzing.
Yep. You know.
The Natural of History of Fear. It is a criminal offense to copy or attempt to copy any personality or memory-related article shown or displayed in this public theater, including this warning. Punishment or conviction is an unlimited reduction of authorized overtime hours and total personality revision. You are not permitted to bring any jukebox or recording equipment into this public theater. This will be treated as an attempted breach copyright. Any person doing so can be ejected, and the editor may confiscate such articles. We ask the public to be vigilant against any such activity and report any matters arousing suspicion to their conscience. Thank you. Public warning. Fraction against character theft.
Is that the synopsis for this?
Yeah, that's where I got it from. I got it from Big Finish.
Gosh. I appreciate that.
Here's what I give that synopsis. Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, the story gets more than that, but that synopsis. Well,
how do you describe the story without giving it away?
Yeah, no, that's the problem. But I appreciate...
The synopsis could as well
I would rather have a two-line sentence than
the doctor and Charlie and Chris show up.
Sometimes Big Finish, you get a little too clever, and that's just being a little too clever there.
Almost too clever.
They did that again with
Scared Soul.
Scared Soul.
Here's from Wikipedia.
Look at us saying it right.
Yeah. We almost sound like we know what we're talking about.
Thank you, Dr. Bill.
The one in Wikipedia says, in Light City, a prol can remember details from the information which has not yet been shown about three characters, the Doctor, Charlie, and Chris, and is brought before the editor for daring to ask questions, a terrible thought crime.
That's a good description.
Yeah, that is good.
It's better than yours, but it's still not. Again, this is one of those that's really hard to kind of pin down.
I don't read the Big Finish synopsis because it's really long.
The one in the book.
Yeah.
Glenn brought the book today.
I did bring the book today. Well, because this one was one of those ones I knew I was going to have help with, because I'm like Chrissy. I've only heard this once, and I was very confused by it.
I was glued to my seat through most of it.
I was too, but that's
it. But I was still confused.
Yeah,
I was confused.
Up until the last 5 minutes when they started piecing it together.
Midway through part three, I was like, okay, I think I have an idea of what's going on here.
I didn't even at that point.
I was wrong.
Yeah, well, so I didn't, okay. I would agree. I think I thought I figured it out a couple of times.
Your brain was able to wrap around the idea, and then they pull the floor out from you later.
Right, exactly. I think I kept thinking I thought I knew what was going on, and it wasn't until the very end that I went, yeah, well, I was not even close. But I appreciate the story, but it's so scattered. They do a decent job of keeping it within the sphere that it's in, the story within the sphere that it's in, but it's designed to confuse you, but portray a message at the same time. I do think some of the interesting things were when they talked about the infotainments, and they talked about how some of them were lost episodes that never got made.
I wonder if there was a subtle layer in there.
They were seriously going towards that, I think. So I thought that was kind of cool and clever, but it just overall it was like they're trying to make a statement, but the statement wasn't quite getting there. You know what I mean? And then to have the big payoff at the end to find out that they were just playing with their memories, because the doctor just gave them these memories that they basically thrive on, and it wasn't enough a payoff to have to have gone through, you know, what was it, an hour and a half, 2 hours? It was like two hours and 10 minutes. Yeah, so it was for 2 hours going through this thing of just chaos and randomness and really figuring out what's going on here and misdirection and all this stuff. And then suddenly,
first episode, it didn't seem like randomness to me. And then the first episode didn't seem
like randomness. Well, I thought it was quite random because we kept rebooting our characters each time. What did they call them? Repurposed?
Yeah.
Was it repurposing? Each time they were repurposed, a different character was playing somebody different, with the exception of the Doctor. The Doctor was consistent almost to the entire end.
That's because he didn't get reprogrammed.
Right. He was to be repurposed towards the end. In fact, he was trying to get himself
revised
so that he could, because he's the one that's trying to uncover this revolution the whole time. That he's trying to prove to them and himself that he loves the state the most. Essentially, that's what I got out of this, is everybody's trying to one-up each other, and there's really no revolution going on.
Yes.
And everybody's trying to... Everybody's trying to prove to each other that they love the state better than the other. That's what it boiled down to.
That's another reason why I liked it.
And then the Doctor...
All these reasons he's saying he doesn't like it, I like
no,
it.
No. I'm not saying I didn't like this story. Don't get me wrong. It's just some of the issues I have with it is the fact that it's just kind of there and confusing. And, maybe I didn't like it. I don't know.
See, this story, much like Scherzo, is what I expect, is what I've kind of, I hope for and think when I hear Divergent Universe. Things are not going to be what we expect and what they should be. Whereas the previous story and the next one are pretty straightforward. Doctor Who stories. This is... I may not have enjoyed Scherzo as much as you guys did. This is the one that really cements the Divergent Universe for me of things are very different here.
The problem with this and Scherzo is this was almost like we were trying to do Scherzo again. Like we were trying to do this whole mind-bending story
more,
again.
More like we know how to do Scherzo better.
No, see, Scherzo was so much better.
I don't think so.
The other thing that I liked was the thing that crept back up in this one was the story from Scherzo that he was telling alongside the story creeps back up in this one. And I think later you kind of play it off as, well, that was just part of the memory, but it almost applies to this story as well as it does Scherzo. In fact, it almost applies
better
to this one, and it makes sense, absolutely. A little more sense in this, especially since we know the rest of the story, because we really only get the first part of the story, but we know the rest of the story, so it sort of plays in there a little better as well.
See, I think I kind of fall right in between you two, because this is one of those stories that only Big Finish could do. I don't think you could have done this on screen, because it would have been fairly obvious.
It's clear that Big Finish is only Big Finish could do these, because this is like the third story we've gone, okay, this is only Big Finish could do this, obviously.
Well, I just from the standpoint of, you could only do it in audio. there's no way to do this animated or in any way visual, because you need to have those visual clues of who the Doctor is taken away from him. If the Doctor showed up on screen immediately with eight legs, we'd go, well, something is not right here.
And just the fact that they held the eight legs out till the very end.
Yeah.
Well, they had to. There's no way. You would totally have given everything away. It's like you said, you can't do it visually.
Well, that's just it. I spent
how many legs do you have? Eight. Well, but that's not
the point. I've said before specifically
that is the point.
in the Paul McGann ones, the Paul McGann's my anchor. So I kind of flounder a little bit until he shows up. And then once he shows up, I can kind of drill down and go, okay, story time. And so he's absent for like most of the first story. He shows up very late, but then he shows up and he's not the Doctor. He's the editor.
I honestly didn't recognize Chris's voice early
on. Yeah, I didn't either.
Because it's been so long.
It's been a while and we've only had the one story with him. So
I pinpointed early on which one was Chris. Based on the characters that we had. Because at the beginning we had... Because he was the editor. Or not the editor. He was the conscience for the longest time. And I figured that one out.
Well, and then... And then
was able to follow him through.
As I'm floundering around in the confusion that the story is generating, I'm intrigued, but I'm confused. I mean, it's like, okay, this is really kind of cool and different, but I'm still way confused. I really have no idea what's going on. And then I kind of kept coming back to, we've got a conscience and we've got an editor.
Just the idea of this light sitting fascinating.
Maybe this is all playing out in their heads. Maybe somewhere there's an id. Because we've got a conscious, so maybe there's an id. So I'm kind of stealing myself for what is the big... And then I find myself getting disappointed, because it's just like Scherzo. It's like we've already done kind of the mind-bending story, which, again...
I see that. That's the only parallel I see is that it's mind-bending.
Well, but...
Okay, it makes us think. How is that bad?
Here's the problem with that is Scherzo opened the door for what I thought the Divergent universe was going to be.
Right.
And then we get the standard story, Creed of the Cormorant, after it, which is kind of like, more like you said, it's more of a standard adventure story. So now we're going back and playing with your mind again, and it's like, almost make up your
which
mind.
Is
which is it for this Divergent
right,
universe?
Exactly. Because that was another reason I had a problem with it. Yeah.
And then you change.
Well, I think that's a bigger problem with the second story than this story, was they haven't decided. And so if they should have, if these two were back-to-back, Scherzo and this... This is what it would be. Now they just can't decide. Well, I don't think you can blame this story for that faulting.
But based on the formula of how it has been in the Divergent universe, I've actually been glad that they have paced them out this way, because you get that kind of different, surreal sort of feel of this universe, and then you move on and do kind of a basic story. So you're kind of grounded. You're brought back to reality somewhat, and So when you're going to turn around and do that again, if you did on Scherzo and this one back to back, I would have hated it even worse I would have disliked it even more because they feel so much of the same. I would have felt that they weren't really trying to stretch out there and do something a little different. But putting that one in between actually helped this story, because then I was like, okay, now we're going to do another one of these little like weird mind bending stories. And I was actually okay with that. And I went the same place that you did with it, with, okay, we're talking about conscience, we're talking about editor, we're talking about controller, but it must be in somebody's brain. It must be inside someone's head, and that's where everything's going on. And
you know where...
But then that doesn't play out either, because, and especially when the nurse, or Charlie, takes the doctor, or the editor, outside of the...
Light City.
Yeah, Light City. And suddenly you're not connected to that consciousness anymore. And she's trying to show to him that, you know, you can, she's inciting thought in him and questioning, or at least he's always had it, because he's,
right.
His guise is that he's using it, and it ultimately ends up being the truth, but his guise is he's using it to find this resistance, to find this revolution, and to kind of squash it. But he has to understand it in order to do so. And so then when she pulls him outside, then that's when I got the kind of, okay, I don't think this is really in somebody's mind. I think this really is a society that, and someone is placing control over it from the outside, which, you know, when they start talking about the controllers, then I went a whole different direction with that. So, right. I mean, and that doesn't end up...
Here's the thing, that Keith's not wrong, because you and I are faulting this story for following Creed of the Cormorant and not being a follow-up, which is kind of the way Keith and I felt about...
Creed of the Cormorant.
No, well, yeah. But also, we kind of dogged on Planet of the Daleks, because we didn't feel it was a proper follow-up to... the one with the
Frontier in Space.
And so I kind of, on the one hand, I hate to do that, but at the same time, you guys promised me a Divergent universe. You kind of set that whole idea up, and we're going into this arc of stories.
To be fair, there is a lot of diversity.
Well, yeah, but I still...
That's what I like.
I like that it's different, but I wish that there would have been a little bit better thought out at the beginning for how these were going to play out.
See, now, but I think they have. They have thought it out, or they would have put Scherzo together, or they would have put... But right now, they have paced them out. Now, it sounds like we're only getting from the next story, it sounds like we're only getting one more story in the Divergent universe, is kind of the impression I get, but
we'll get there. Here's kind of where I went with it. You guys talk about the conscience and the mind, and okay, I hear conscience, and I think, okay, yeah. Or they're supposed to be your moral compass. And then once the repurposing starts, especially after the first story ends, and then we get back to the whoever she was, and then she becomes the nurse, and it's India Fisher, regardless, the entire time. Tron.
You know,
that's where I went with it in my mind.
I kind of I drew some allusions to Tron, because Light City.
I didn't, but I could see
they repurpose the program. They all have a certain structure. I mean,
I can see that now. You say that
Light City. I mean,
that for me was the biggest tip off to go that direction with it. Was we've got Light City.
For me, it was more the repurposing of we're going to change your
reprogramming
personality
and doing that kind of stuff. And the story did kind of feel a little Tron-like, where we've got some elements that are trying to incite a rebellion, but we're not really sure what's going on. We've got other elements that are trying to track them down, but have to do it within the confines of their programming, if you will, of what they've been
given. Which, and they even talk about, you're only programmed to do this.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, would we have gone to Tron, though, if we had heard this when it came out because Tron Legacy wasn't out yet.
Yeah,
Tron was enough of a Tron, the original Tron is different enough that from Tron Legacy that it's not quite the same.
Well, story. What's interesting is I was listening to this.
And if it weren't for Tron Uprising, I probably still wouldn't have
gone. Yeah, exactly.
So. I was listening to this and I kept thinking, it was just tickling the back of my brain. It was like, this reminds me of a movie. This reminds me of a movie. And in very much the same way that we've discussed some of the Hinchcliffe era as, well, this is, you know, Brandon Morbius is obviously Frankenstein.
Which is funny that this. Hinchcliffe said that wasn't the intent at all.
I asked him that when I got to meet him. I was like, so did you guys purposely did that? And he says that was all Bob Holmes. If he did it, he was this. Because I asked him specifically about Seeds of Doom being like the thing. And he goes, really? I was like, the 1980 version, it's like they copied what you guys did. And he's like, I'll have to go back and watch that one again. So he didn't see that it was there, which I thought was interesting. But I just kept thinking to myself, this one feels like they borrowed a little bit of an element from a movie, but then also had that underlying Happiness Patrol, which I was stuck on Happiness Patrol because I just watched it.
Yeah.
You know, but when they kept coming on going, happiness through productivity or productivity through happiness, whatever it is, and it's like, okay, I'm trying to fit these pieces together, but you guys keep throwing me off track with the confusion of what's going on with the stuff. And it's really not until the last 5 or 10 minutes of this thing when they go, ta-da, here's the reveal.
Right.
And then it was mind-blown because I was like, what? I mean, I didn't see any of that coming.
I didn't either. It really raised
my appreciation for what had come before.
I didn't like it
when I was bogged down in it, but then getting outside of it, I was like, oh, okay.
But here's the other thing that I have a problem with is I watch or listen to Doctor Who because I want it to be Doctor Who, and this was a very far thing from it. And I like Paul McGann, but I don't like bad Paul McGann. I like Eighth Doctor, but I don't like bad Eighth Doctor. And it seems like I'm not understanding their performance because they all do a fantastic job, don't get me wrong. But I enjoy the Eighth Doctor in my little nice little cookie cutter formula, and I want that. And since we've been in a Divergent universe, and even before that was the greatest, we have not had that.
And even Charlie comments on that in the next
one. Yeah, absolutely. Different. Well, yeah. And so I think I'm ready to just get out. I'm ready to be done with the Divergent universe and get back to the Eighth Doctor. And I don't even care if the Eighth Doctor gets dark and changes and becomes a little more moody or whatnot. But this whole like internal conflict that seems to be going on there is bothersome. And we don't get that in this particular story, except for the fact that he's playing an entirely different part. And in that part, which when you're believing that this must be the Doctor, but there's something's gone wrong here,
but they've repurposed his mind,
or something's going on. Then I had the Minuet Hell syndrome that you had, where I just didn't like the Doctor. I didn't like what was going on there, and so it was I didn't care.
Part of it, I didn't believe that he was just doing it for the States. I thought part of his true personality was bleeding through, and that's why he was acting justifying his actions by.
And that's kind of where
he was playing along when he kept saying, "Bring me the box. I'll test myself. Come on, bring it on." And it's like it was because he's still in control.
That was more of what I thought was that he was playing them and trying to he had to work the system until he could finally get this thing resolved, and it didn't, and then it starts breaking away from that even idea early on or halfway through. And you're thinking, okay, this isn't so. I don't like the Doctor in that, even though he's not even the Doctor. I don't like Charlie in this because he's not Charlie.
I realized early enough that. Okay, this isn't the Doctor. It's somebody else in his body, or they've reprogrammed his mind.
See, maybe if I'd have bought that sooner or come up with that idea sooner, I would have.
The only time we really get the Doctor in this story is in the flashback when they're talking about when they first land or where they're supposed to walk in.
I love the use of flashback in this. Oh, let's go watch this recording of your memory. That is such a cool idea.
That was a cool idea.
It was cool. I like that.
For purposes of how this was set up.
I like some of the concepts in this, don't get me wrong. It's just, as a Doctor Who story, it doesn't work well for me.
But when he's digging through his pockets forever, and you hear, again, what was that? What was that thing that kind of sounded like the walking robot and the toy ray gun and he's pulling stuff out and then he's got Ray-Bans. Look, you can squish them. And they spring back. Squish, spring, squish, spring. I'm thinking, I can so see McGann doing that. Absolutely. And he's standing there, that was my doctor. There he was. And then we're off and running and playing in the fountains, and things got confusing again. Yeah. And it just so it was
naked, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie really kind of makes it obvious that
she seemed a little she seemed a little perturbed by that. But so it was just like I said, you had to get through all of this in order to make those last 10 minutes worthwhile. It's kind of like Star Wars. You have to sit through the prequels and then get to the good stuff.
It's nothing like Star Wars.
But I just, I teetered on this through the whole thing. There were parts of it that I really wanted to like, and I really wanted to appreciate the attempt and what they were doing and the concept. And then I kept going back to, but I'm confused, and you're doing it to me on purpose, and I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, I don't know. It's just kind of in there.
And I'm with you. I think that the last 10 minutes where we get the payoff makes you appreciate what came before. But if what had come before hadn't been about 2 hours of that, I could have appreciated even more.
Yeah.
But I think it was too long. I felt like I was strung along for way too long for that payoff.
I don't know. I thought there was a lot of little hints dropped throughout it of what's going on.
There were, and they make them obvious once you get there, but they weren't obvious until you get there.
I picked up on the hints throughout it. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is what's going on. I ended up being wrong to some extent, but not completely.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I really like this story. This is probably my favorite Big Finish so far.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I really like the story. Just the ideas in the city and this whole society of what's going on. Fantastic.
Mm. This was kind of a minuet in hell for me. I mean, your opinion of minuet in hell. I like that one.
The city I liked. The idea that you are thrown in there and disoriented until you figure out, okay, this isn't actually the Doctor. This is what we think is the Doctor repurposed and Charlie repurposed. And they're watching Doctor Who on television because it's from their memories. And they're trying to make the perfect society by breeding out all these questions. And just the idea of living in a society where questions are outlawed. How do you speak?
Again,
They
asked a lot of questions for a society that didn't ask a question.
Well, some of them did.
A lot of them.
The ones that are allowed in the story to ask questions. Well, but once Charlie becomes the later version, she doesn't ask any questions.
No. Well, even when they're asking questions, they're questions that are framed in such a way that it's a statement. So
They're demanding technically, things instead of asking.
Technically, they're questions, but the way that they have
hearing some questions.
No, there were. Don't get me wrong. There were a few.
I kept thinking to myself, but that was a question.
There's a good chunk of them where they have just really kind of reformatted the way that the question is asked, restructured the way the question is asked, so it isn't necessarily being asked.
They say, "Tell me about this Doctor Who bobblehead," instead of, "What's with this Doctor Who bobblehead?"
Yeah, is this, or what do you think this is? Tell me about this.
For the most, there were times where I thought, oh, wait, that's a question. But then the character asking that question, it's like, well, that makes sense that he will allow himself to ask the question.
Right.
And then there are later instances.
A lot of questions.
Well, yeah, but I'm the editor, I can do that. Well,
and then later on, especially,
because he's trying to dig down in and get information.
I was really impressed when Charlie got repurposed a third time.
Becomes the conscience. Or no, she becomes
when she becomes the new editor. She becomes
the new editor.
New editor, yeah.
She doesn't ask any questions at all in that scene. If you go back and re-listen, there are no questions.
Right.
Because I listened very closely to make sure.
Yeah, she doesn't. You're right.
All of that was cool. I will stand up and applaud any story that will constantly have me guessing until the credits.
I will too, but there's a difference between.
I thought I knew what was going to happen, and while I was somewhat right, the execution was different. Yeah. I thought the Doctor was being repurposed. Well, his memory's here, and was being repurposed.
There's a difference though between there's a difference though between keeping you guessing and being chaotic with sprinkling a few hints here and there.
I didn't think it was chaotic.
It's a difference between keeping you guessing in a well-done, well-formatted way, or stringing you along.
Yeah,
and then hitting you over the head with that surprise, this is the ending. And that's kind of how I felt it was.
I think so.
Now, don't get me wrong. I still liked the end. I still, and it made me appreciate this better. But, it was an Inception. Like Inception, I really felt like I was guessing and I was on a balance and I didn't know what was going on until we got to the end. And then it was like, wow, that was really great. And then there were other times during this particular one that I didn't feel like it was Inception. I felt like it was some other movie where it was just kind of like, ha-ha, surprise. And then that Shyamalan and Ding-Dong. Well, even that, though. I mean, like, Sixth Sense. If you go back and look at Sixth Sense, I didn't see the end of that coming, and I felt like I was blown away by that. Unbreakable. I was blown away by that.
But then Usual Suspects.
Yeah. Those are fantastic examples of being surprised because we saved it all for the end. And if you go back and look, yeah, there are a couple hints there to point to this, but you didn't get it. But then there are, I can't think of one now, but then there's a host of other movies that are like, all you did was string me along to get to that end.
Yeah. I didn't yeah. felt strung along.
I felt strung along.
I felt strung
in,
along.
The other M. Night, the one where they're in the village. Oh, the village. Yeah. That's what it's called. The one where they're in the village. What's it called? That one. You know, there's this big village.
There's a village,
and then there's a village. But yeah, I felt strung along a little bit in the village.
I liked the village, but I liked it for I think different reasons. I know a lot of people hated it because it wasn't what they were promised. And it's like, well, it's not a horror film. But first of all, that's kind of where I think a lot of people went astray on that one. But I'll defend M. Night with the exception of, because I haven't seen the last couple, but I like Signs, too.
Signs is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'll watch War of the Worlds. It's done better.
Okay, that's another podcast. I'm going to save it. That's how much I have on that one.
Yeah, it's nothing like War of the Worlds.
It's nothing like War of the Worlds. You're talking to a War of the Worlds fanatic. It's nothing like War of the Worlds.
No, it's a poorly done ripoff.
It's the genius of the fact that we're going to tell the alien invasion of Earth story
in a little microcosm.
From one town. Yep. From one, not only a town, but from one farmhouse.
That's
like Battle
that,
LA.
That it part of the story, I don't have a problem just deal with.
A squad of guys it's in LA.
Easy resolution. That's stupid.
I didn't say
make another weakness.
I didn't say the aliens were intelligent. You're allergic to water. You're going to attack a planet that's 78% water. I'm not in your mindset. I was okay with the
resolution, and then I was like, "You're the dumbest person to ever write a movie ever."
I spent that whole movie not knowing whether because I've been tricked by M. Night before,
and he didn't know how to resolve the movie.
I've been tricked by M. Night before. I wasn't sure if there was actually an alien invasion until them fingers came out.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I kept waiting for that to be a alien invasion at all. All right, our next one is
any last thoughts on natural history?
No.
I can't say enough great things about this story.
I think it could have been better.
And Glenn didn't really like it, and I'm kind of on the fence with it, but probably side closer to Glenn.
I need to let it soak in a little bit more because I didn't dislike
it. And it might have helped me that I had it spread out over a
That's
week.
True. You and I were probably cramming you guys to get stuff it. Done.
I did mainline that one as much as I did this next one. The I was actually listening to that one over the course of the last few days. But
oh wow!
Monday through
there is totally a face on the cover. Mm-hmm. Of that.
That's what Grizzly's talking about on Twilight Kingdom.
I went through like Thursday to Wednesday listening to it, so I was able to stop, take breaks, digest what I've listened to, and process it.
Yeah. Well, see, I listened to it between Friday and now, so well. Like I finished it.
How long of chunks were there, though?
I'll probably listen to about 20 minutes at a time as I was doing other things.
I listened to the first part, I think.
Now, the other one I plowed through in an hour and a half, or 2 hours. It was almost 2 hours, too.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else.
I plowed through it for an hour and a half.
It was fine. I'm ready to get out of the Divergent universe, though.
They still haven't knocked me over. I don't know. I kind of keep hoping that it's like Key to Time or that it's, you know.
Well, wait till you hear the end of the next one and you'll realize that there's something more going on.
That's the other thing. The insect, you've got eight legs. That reveal for me kind of solidified for me your thought.
You know what solidified my thought for me was the end of 20.
That we're moving from petri dish to petri dish and then we're going from the single cell organisms. Up to whatever was going on in Creed of the Cormon with slug creatures.
Yeah, they were worms.
And now we're insects.
Now we've got legs.
And so, you know, now we're in a cave. But let's talk about the cave.
Yeah.
Let's go to Twilight Kingdom.
The Twilight Kingdom. The blood of innocence has been spilt. A terrible sequence of events has been set in motion. The forces of darkness are on the move. Deep underground, an army of light prepares itself for the oncoming war. The Doctor is used to winning, stumbling in, reading the face of the enemy, then beating the odds. But what if this time he's got it wrong? Charlie and Cariz thinks he has. Stripped of all that is familiar, just who is the doctor? Major Koth thinks he knows. Lost among the dark caverns of an unknown world, has the doctor finally met his match?
See, the plot, the Wikipedia version is the Eighth Doctor, Cariz, and Charlie enter the lair of a suspected terrorist, but not all is what it seems. Dun, dun, dun. All right, Keith, lay it on us.
We're back to status quo.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
I would agree.
Oh, look, we're now walking through a jungle, and then we get captured, and then we get captured by other people, and then we get taken down to a cave. And we're welcome to be a part of the revolution or die.
The trope here is we're fighting a war that we don't know anything about, and we don't realize that there's really not a war going on. We're fighting a revolution against a entity that doesn't really exist, and that, I mean, that's been done before.
What's interesting in the first part of this story is that the doctor keeps asking, "What planet do you think you're on?"
Right, right.
Because all these people think they're on a different planet than where they are.
Right.
And so then this discovery of what's really happening is more the interesting part of this story. Not the revolution, not the cave monster.
No. It's bait and switch.
It's a couple drops and then the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas the last story, what was going on had me interested. This story, it was kind of, I don't care about your damn revolution.
I
kind of
thought the same thing. I was like, okay, we're training. Well, suddenly we've got Chris. Well, that's the first thing, is that we've got the Doctor and Charlie who are trying to escape, and they're locked up, and then they escape. But we've got Chris who has gotten all buddy-buddy up with the commander and is like...
Weapons training.
Exactly. It's falling in right into line with his. Now, they've already admitted that he comes from kind of a pacifist society, a pacifist race. Now, granted, he was thrown into the throngs of war in our first story that we introduced. So you kind of give him a little bit of slack for having a little bit of that mentality, but it's almost like really quickly done. Again, that's explained away later as to why it happens, but it's really kind of, and I'm like, I don't really care that you're that you have this revolution going on, and I want to know a little more about it, and they keep you just under the surface that mystery, and there's a reason why they keep you under the surface of the mystery. But I did the same thing. I felt myself not caring about any of these characters, not caring about their revolution or what it was for, because they weren't giving me enough reason to sympathize with them. Essentially, is what it boiled down to. And I do like the conflict between Charlie and the Doctor. I do like the fact that Charlie is getting aggressive against the Doctor based on an outside influence, because that was clear to me when it was happening, was that neither Cariz or her were in their right mind, that something was influencing them. So that came to me early on, which didn't please me either, because it felt like I was figuring it out too soon. But I do like the fact that they have the conflict, and she talks about all the thousands of times that he says that he's led resistance against different factions or against different political movements, and this time she does, he's against them and doesn't feel like he's going to help them, and she feels that he should help them. And so I thought that was kind of a cool little conflict going on there as well, and we get that aggression against the Doctor. Again, that plays out and makes sense later. And so,
and one of the other things I really liked was the eventual reveal was of this monster, this creature of
the Kroka. Is that what they were?
No, that's the guy at the end.
Oh, Kroka was the right. He's the voice.
He's the big bad. The idea of this creature becoming contact with such grief. I liked a lot of that, and that it was not native to this planet. Somebody put it there. That's like, ooh, I wonder what's going on there. This story more than anything.
Did you spoil yourself again?
No.
Gives us you looked away, slammed the book closed like you'd read something that you didn't want to
cough. I didn't want to cough in the mic.
This story, more than anything else, is the setup to bigger questions to be answered later.
Yes. Especially the end.
It's when the doctor starts keying into, wait, something bigger is going on here with Kroka.
Right.
Charlie and Cariz may not know until the end, but the doctor is questioning so much of, wait, where do you think you are? What's going on here, really? That's all this is to me. It's the penultimate episode of a season that puts moves the chess pieces to the correct places for the finale.
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet.
I think unless the end of the Divergent Universe is three parts, I think there's several more that we're still in
this
there.
This is four. This is part four.
Mm-hmm. Now he's saying that there are more audios in the Divergent Universe.
I think there are still more audios in the Divergent Universe than that, because I don't think it ends until the next line.
But I agree. The end of this makes it sound like they've set up the finale, not the finale, but what really the realization of what's happening, what's going to come. Going back to the cave monster, I totally agree with Chrissy that this is how the Azarmaloth should have been done.
Absolutely.
I love the fact that you touch the inside of it and suddenly you become part of the consciousness of it. And I like the fact that they're utilizing Koff. Is that his name?
Major Koff.
Yeah. Yes. And the fact that he's just this disembodied head is all that's left. But he's able to kind of materialize himself or copies of himself within the faction.
That is
pretty
cool.
The soil is what becomes, he keeps talking about the soil and how there was something here before and it's gone.
It looks
but
like
all that's left is the soil.
He's been sleeping in it or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I love the fact that the soil is becoming these copies, and that's how he's been getting around and manipulating the faction as it's been happening. But to come across this and realize this is really what's going on. And then the sacrifice that Jonto.
Yes.
The sacrifice that Jonto makes at the end was really cool, because Jonto has been kind of our quasi antagonist. He's been kind of our anti villain. He's not really our villain, but he's kind of the anti villain because he's got a different agenda.
He's very anti-establishment.
Exactly.
For sure.
That's certainly what it is. And so we've got that going for us. But at the end, I'm afraid that I might be spoiling this for somebody, but at the end, when he sort of takes the place, he takes the doctor's place at the end, I was like, oh, well, that's kind of neat. I like how they've kind of turned the tables here and kind of given you compassion for Jonto. That really maybe he was the only one this whole time that was making any sense and was the rationale of everything, and that there's a reason why he was the way that he was. You know, so I liked that as well.
This one, while the first one I kept thinking of, well, this reminds me of a movie, but I'm not sure which one it was until Keith said Tron, that I kind of latched onto that and went, yeah, maybe that was it. This one, for me, very, very early, felt like Apocalypse Now. I mean, we're going into the jungle, and we've got a renegade commander, and we're going to go hunt him down, and immediately we kind of get wrapped up in that whole story. And so then we're there at the place, and we're dealing with this, and then it turns out that, well, we're actually inside the space slug from Star Wars. We walk right into the mouth of this thing, and the floor feels strange. It doesn't look like rock, and it's like, because it isn't. But I didn't see any of that coming until we got into the digestive chamber and went, ooh. Yeah. So that was a great reveal. I kind of had the same problem that you guys had with the Revolution. Because it's been done before, how many times in Doctor Who have we walked into a revolutionary camp? I mean, it was Genesis of the Daleks. It was there's always a war going on somewhere with somebody.
Doctor's Daughter, even more recently.
Yeah,
you can't just turn around and...
We're always finding ourselves there.
You can't turn around without finding a revolution.
That's right. Yeah, pretty much. And, well, we just did a revolution in Light City.
Yeah.
Not really. Turned out not to. There was a revolution in Light City.
Oh, yes. Well, there wasn't one, but that was the impression.
We just got done with overthrowing the Kormon. It's just kind of been dun-dun-dun-dun, let's go to the next revolution and, let's overthrow the government. Yeah. All right. And so for the Doctor to kind of get wrapped into this one where we don't know who's right and who's wrong and who's to say that maybe this Major is not necessarily all that bad a guy and he actually has a better idea, especially if he hasn't really attacked anybody. Well, it doesn't sound like such a horrible person to me. So maybe these people are the bad guys. But we very quickly kind of drop that in favor of the what's the mystery at the heart of the cave, and why is everybody so keen to just kind of lounge around here and stay, and why is all of a sudden Charlie, throwing things back in the doctor's face, and the one thing that she said that because I was very anti-Charlie this episode. When she started kind of getting on the doctor's case, of course, I rose to his defense. I was like, you leave him alone, But instead, it's kind of like the one thing she said, well, he's been different since we got into the Divergent universe, and I don't know why. I
was okay.
Like, okay, well, I'll give you that.
That line I had problems with because she knows why.
Exactly.
That was
my biggest problem with this is she makes that statement. Now, she's not quite in her mindset. I'll give her that.
Yeah.
But she makes that statement, and my thought was, are you kidding me? Why would you think that? Because you know what happened during Zagreus. You know that he absorbed all the anti-time. You know that he went through this whole personality issue. And suddenly you're trying to put the same kind... I mean, you're trying to do what I'm doing and trying to make him the cookie-cutter Eighth Doctor that I like. And so it's almost like you're blind to the fact that he still has this issue that he's going to have to deal with.
Yeah, we haven't addressed
that
at all.
And we've seen that since Scherzo. We've seen that these little hints of instability in the Doctor the whole time. And it surprises you here? Yeah, I had a real problem with that.
It surprises me from the standpoint that I don't think Charlie...
And it reminds me of when are we going to deal with this fact that he has anti-time in there.
I think we're getting
there. I think Charlie's just written off the fact that, well, first of all, they're both alive, which they shouldn't be. And yes. They've survived to this point that she's already kind of reset her brain back to status quo and let's get on and
You get to status quo episodes like this one.
Well, but it's not so much that. It's just, let's hurry up and find the TARDIS and go home is kind of where her mind's already at. I don't think she's... I think she's very easy to overlook the whole Zagreus aspect.
Where we left things, they can't go home.
Yeah.
Until they resolve this anti-time issue.
Exactly.
They can't go home. They may not be at the whim of this creature or whoever that's letting them go from area to area, and they can maybe roam a bit better and be in a safe environment, but they can't go home still.
Well, even that, though, I think would be an improvement for her. Just the confines of the TARDIS, I think, would be...
Yes,
that familiarity with.
But you can play that off with the fact that she so wants it to be the way it once was, that that's where her mind is going, is that that's the ultimate goal. But you can't be surprised by the fact that the Doctor is acting a certain way when he's been acting like that this whole time.
I feel sad saying this because I agree with you, but I can virtually guarantee that at some episode coming up, Zagreus will rear his ugly head and she will be freaked out. She'll be like, oh, you still have Zagreus in you? Forehead smack and go, really? You didn't see that?
It won't be Zagreus.
Well, it'll be...
I'm going to spoil you here in a minute, so...
You think it's Rassilon?
I know it's Rassilon.
Did they
name it?
Oh, yeah. The Doctor is looking for Rassilon. That's how this... For the listener, we haven't driven this home. Sean didn't quite get finished with this story,
I still have about 20 minutes. Almost 20.
Okay. The end of this story is where it got really good for me, and I agree with Keith.
The last 3 minutes of this story.
It's like we have set, like we've just kind of delved into the Divergent universe so that we could kind of set up for this point. And this becomes this story feels so much like that because this becomes the penultimate point. There may be more stories, but I have a feeling they're going to kind of...
It's like a season and a half.
Yeah, I think they're going to kind of
start
maybe
moving along,
and get there. So, but at the end of this, first of all...
this is like getting to the end of Heroes Season 1 and then getting ready for a short Season 2.
The Doctor has figured out. He says...
Boy, I sure hope not.
Is it Croca?
The Croca.
Okay, he figures out by this time... That since the Croak is getting ready to move them through to the next, barrier. The Doctor figures it out. He says that, but before that, I guess it's before that, he says, I really feel like this is some sort of crucible, like we're in some giant lab. So he says that. So now the Doctor has solidified my suspicions that that's what this was. And that was very deeming for me because we went through these last two stories and didn't really... I mean, we still had kind of this Pertwee-ish type thing going on, but they really weren't still going anywhere with that. And I thought, oh, maybe this isn't... But that really solidified it. And then at the end, when Carys goes through and Charlie goes through, he stays back and says he has a conversation quickly with
The Kuroka.
Kuroka.
Which of, why did you come here? Why are you in? Why are you here? What's your mission? I thought you were on a mission. And aren't you looking for something?
Well, I love the fact that the doctor, first of all, says, I know where this is going, and if you do anything to harm them, you'll know. Yes. You know what I'll do. You know what I'll basically what will happen. And then he says kind of that, and then he says, well, what are you looking for? What's your mission? Didn't you have a goal? And he says, I do. I'm looking for Rassilon. It is, that's where he's going. He knows he's following this thing to a core, and I think he believes Rassilon is actually here.
So this is the lab of Rassilon.
The
entire Divergent universe is the lab
Let's
of Rassilon.
Let's make it sound a little cooler. It's the crucible of Rassilon. I like that.
The trials
the
of Rassilon.
The lab of Rassilon.
The laboratory of Rassilon.
The sash of Rassilon. The key of Rassilon. Those weren't cool things. The lab of Rassilon. Come on. I mean, because we know that Rassilon was an inventor and a scientist in his own right. Probably not to Omega standards, but we, you know, he had...
I love the fact that in Zagreus we think that we're going to find Rassilon. That's ultimate, and the whole bait and switch of that is the fact that Rassilon really never existed. I mean, that wasn't who they went to, but not in that sense. And so now to find out that the doctor suspects that Rassilon is existing and probably is the one that's the manipulator of all this, and that's who he's going to look for. That was a huge revelation, and I'm sorry that I've spoiled the last 20 minutes for you, that was the most incredible part of this story. It was coming we've kind of said where we're going.
Yeah, well, and, you know, if I didn't have the Oscar party to plan for, I would have got my 20 minutes listened to. But we've kind of known from Zagreus on that we've suspected that that's where this was going. So I don't feel in some ways that it's a spoiler to kind of have that confirmed for me.
I don't know that we knew Rassilon, but we knew there's something.
I think we talked about after Zagreus and Skirtzo that we kind of thought that Rassilon might be the one behind all this.
Well, I guess because we know based on some spoilers that Rassilon comes back in the Big Finish universe, so I suppose.
Do we know that for sure?
Well,
I didn't.
Never mind. Spoilers.
There's Glenn throwing stuff out there like we know what we're talking about.
Well, I thought that's what you kind of got it from, because I had thrown away the Rassilon thing altogether once Zagreus kind of finished.
So did I, until this line
once Zagreus,
I never throw anything away.
Once Zagreus kind of finished, it kind of put aside the fact that the Rassilon thing was still a legend that was being chased, and that it really wasn't.
And I still chalk it up to that. I think that's where we're still going with this.
Well,
I think it's just a legend.
Chasing the legend, but
I think he's in his tomb in his
tomb in the Dark Tower.
Yeah, in the Dark Tower. And there may be a Matrix copy of him somewhere, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, but and we did experience the Matrix copy,
which was half of Zagreus.
Yeah. We also don't know that he's actually dead.
It's true.
Clearly, he's not dead because he came back and fought alongside the Gallifreyans in the Time War. But
somehow they pulled him back.
I still subscribe to they pulled him out of his time stream previous and brought him into the future to set that right, but I think I'd have
destroyed the Time Lords at that point too, because that's like the biggest no-no. You don't you don't do that. And so if you have to do that,
unless it's the Doctor
in desperation. Well, the Doctor does it, but he gets around it in such a way.
Well,
the Doctor doesn't pull himself out.
Yeah, he gets pulled out of it.
Well, that's just it. We don't know, because didn't Dr. Phil spoil for us at one point that Romana was behind that decision to go get? Or was that something he was just holding?
That was in the story.
No, Romana
was in the decision to go to the Divergent universe to try to get the casket of Rassilon and bring it back.
She was part of that, but no.
Specifically for the Time War.
No,
didn't that get established in one of some somewhere?
You're remembering this backwards, because Dr. Phil asked, what's the producer, Big Finish producer? Is that
Jason Hay-Illery? Or
no.
Nick?
No, not Nick either.
Barnaby.
Not Barnaby.
The other one.
There's another guy that's kind of the big cheese that they all kind of report to. And he was interviewing, I believe it was him, and he was interviewing him, and he asked him about, okay, I like to think that Romana was not directly responsible for the events basically bringing Rassilon back. And he sort of said that Russell steered him in that sense that way. Russell T. Davis sort of steered him in the sense that no, it really wouldn't have been Romana's fault, even though she was kind of in charge up until a certain point, and that he didn't feel that in Big Finish they were going that route either, that Romano was responsible for making the decision to pull Rassilon back in either. So that
was more than likely in the upcoming Gallifrey Season 5, we'll finally get to that point where Romana's on one side of the schism saying, we're not going after Rassilon, and the rest of the timelines will say, no, we need Rassilon.
Or maybe not the rest of them, but somebody else, another faction of them, say, no, it's necessary. So I don't know.
We're assuming that they get up to that point in the Time War, too. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, this sort of comes down as a run-of-mill story. It's kind of eh, but I think it really kind of pays itself off at the end, because it really, unlike the story before this, why keep forgetting the name? The Nightmare, what's the
Natural History
Natural
of Fear.
History of
Which,
fear.
That's the other thing, is that title does not make anything with what's going on in that.
It doesn't.
I will agree
with
you on that.
It's a poor title.
It's a very poor title for that story.
Where the Natural History of Fear... Light City.
Adventures in Light City or something.
Not even Adventures, just Light City. But where it kind of set, you know, the end of it was the payoff for all that came before.
A Beautiful Mind.
The end of this one is more of a payoff of what's to come.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
I look forward to finishing it. I may have some additional thoughts then, but I don't think so. I can just from what I've heard, I mean, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised that we've got a cave monster. I mean, that was, because
the,
I was
the cave monster was very well realized. I
really
and it
drilled
become
into
very
that.
Threatening, and
well, I really drilled into that Apocalypse Now element. We spent so much time dealing with these resistance fighters that weren't doing anything. Quit spoiling yourself and get out of the book. That
is that my game? Oh, it is.
Which one's that one?
The Next Life. Daphne's in it. Daphne does the next one. She's not Grace.
She's not Grace.
She can't be Grace, unfortunately.
Not until they get that legally
get that
cleared
out.
That way she can come back for the 50th.
Yes.
Well, she could do that now. She just wouldn't be Grace.
She's actually in our next poem again that we listened to.
Which is in the Divergent Universe, right?
Fun. It's still... This will be right on to the
right
next one, yeah.
Sweet. So no other thoughts on that?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Alrighty then.
Oh, no, she's not in the next one. Faith Hiller is her next one. Then the last. Then. Where did I see her?
In the Maybe fourth? Next page over.
On the earth did I see her?
Next page over. Turn other way. Go.
No, she wasn't in that one.
Next one?
Oh, yeah, it was 64, the next live. Okay, so we've got four. We're four away.
We're four away. So we got to get to those four before Planet Comic-Con so we can have some Big Finish questions.
Say, hey, you were in a Big Finish, Eddie, as well.
Probably not going to happen that way.
Tweak the schedule.
Well, not for you, but I think I'm going to go on and listen. So.
Probably not going to happen that way. I will let you know now, but not so much.
Gosh, I would have loved to see Grace come back. That would have been awesome.
It would have been.
Oh,
so cool.
So what's next on the schedule, Sean?
Coming up next on the schedule for Friday Night Who, we've got the finishing of Reign of Terror. We started it last week and got through episodes 1, 2, and 3. And so we will be finishing 4, 5, and 6 and finally getting into the animated segments, which I'm very excited about. A little less so now that I've seen some of it, but...
I liked it.
And then we will be discussing Reign of Terror in its entirety on our podcast next week, along with kind of our discussion of the First Doctor and William Hartnell and kind of, his era and kind of our 50th anniversary celebrations of all of that stuff. And you guys are going to have to come up with your definitive Hartnell episode. And Reign of Terror will now be eligible to be picked out of that if you so choose. So there's that. And then after that, we've got for Friday Night Who on it's actually the 8th of March. We've got The King's Demons with Peter Davison. I know Chrissy will be excited to get some more 5th Doctor love in there. And then that week, episode number 115, we do delve back into Big Finish a little bit with one episode. We'll talk King's Demons, and then we'll also talk Primeval, which is number 26 in the main line. So there's that homework for you.
All right. Well, I want to just add real quickly, this just in, Tina Noir, who is one of the Kansas City Time Lords in the Kansas City Time Lords Society, she just messaged us asking if we wanted to vote for her on that Facebook Metcalf.
That was the link.
The link. Did you know she was?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, apparently the judging that we talked about a little bit before,
yes.
She was one of the cosplayers there.
Them
so
doctors.
if you prefer, then you could vote for her. She's a friend of the show. So
we talked to Tina during our
Fan episode.
We did. Yes, she was one of the three. The All right.
Of three.
Well, if that's it, that's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Happiness through acceptance.
Productivity through happiness.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.